today's discussion, we want to talk post-election and what that means for disclosure. So I know Peter has another engagement. If he would like to be one of the first people to speak today and kind of give their opinion. I know we were coming down to the wire. I didn't think we would have a semi-official announcement before our panel today.
Yeah.
So Peter, let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, glad to jump in. For the past 4 years, the disclosure movement has been growing. In this year in particular, the minor matter of the pandemic aside, had it not been for international attention focused on this very serious problem, even people who are not interested in this subject would have been bombarded by the most extraordinary series of government announcements, military confirmations, information releases, acknowledgments from official science about the reality of truly anomalous UFO phenomena. In fact, as somebody that's been in the work for almost 45 years, I am hard pressed to recall a year where so much of officialdom paid more respect to the subject. Since December of 2017, with kind of the paradigm shifting articles in the New York Times that set this sort of change of mind in motion, a lot of us, or a lot of people who follow the subject, have been waiting for the executive branch of the government to respond in some way or another. And in fact, they haven't. I think part of this, no matter whether you like the president or despise him, he is one of the most incurious people in public life. He doesn't seem to have any interest outside of, hey, Melinda, how you doing, dear? Outside of holding power and doing his thing. One can only imagine to what degree he's been briefed on over the past 4 years. I think we'd probably all agree that different presidents have been briefed to different degrees by the intelligence community since 1947. And it probably has a great deal to do with the intelligence community's feeling for or relationship with that president. I'm imagining that our intelligence community has not given more than cursory briefings to Mr. Trump. And on the few occasions when he has been presented with the question of what do you think about this subject, it's run from the innocuous to the innocuous. He really has had no substantial thing to say about it. When I got into the work in the mid 70s and started to connect over the next years with people who had been in for many years before me, one of the stories that was told to me was right around the time that Watergate was about to explode and bring down President Nixon, there was some talk and some informed talk that Nixon, again, whatever you think about the guy as president, he was not stupid and he was quite a master statesman in many respects, that he was considering releasing information about UFOs and their reality with the strategic idea of everybody going nuts, and this is not a good time to jump ship, and you better stick with me because I'm the president and I can help us steer us through this moment of international crisis and paradigm shift. This, as of an hour or so ago, is no longer even a possible scenario. We have a new president elect in the United States, and that's the way it is. What about Mr. Biden? You look at his history of almost 50 years in public life. He's not a perfect guy. He's not an ideal candidate for a lot of us that wanted to see Mr. Trump go. But I think he's a decent, intelligent person. There's no question that the first priorities in his mind and administration are going to be the economy and the pandemic, and not dealt with separately, as the Trump administration seemed intent on doing, but going at them both in a unified kind of way. That's my educated guess. So if he becomes a president who is interested in disclosure, and I'm going to guess that he will be briefed in the first weeks of the presidency on the basics, it will still be backburnered because it's not a matter of immediate priority for him. So I'm guessing if he does decide to act on this or to encourage the release of more information or make a statement about it, we're not going to see it for some time to come.
Peter, I can't agree with you more. I mean, I think disclosure has been something that we've thought about kind of with each presidency since at least the 1950s. Are we going to get some answers? Who is this going to be? These things, or bring them up that, oh, I'll look into that. You know, oh, there's something there. It's interesting. You know, we still didn't get anything firm and concrete, or we didn't get a follow-up from media with those questions at all. So how do you think that really kicks the ball into our court in our community outside of politics, you know, our little niche here? What do you think we can do to keep this ball moving forward?
I think for starters, we can keep doing what we're doing. Number one, a certain amount of national tension and preoccupation with an individual rather than the government will be taking place. And there will be a transition, as my friend Greg Bishop just posted, that he's looking forward to heading into a time of regular, predictable, boring politics, which on a certain level I get and I think we all welcome. You look at the efforts of the group Free, of activists like Melinda, like a lot of the best out there people in the work, and we're making progress. More and more people care less and less what other people think about what they think about the subject. And that's a huge change over the last decade. Those of us that work the conferences regularly know, just by kind of an informal demographic that builds up in our head, that people who would have never talked about their interest in the subject previously now could care less. And that's a very healthy thing in the body politic and in our society. I think we're going to see more and more quality material published. The Trump administration, being driven by him, has been accompanied by so much conspiratorial bullshit. And I think that there's a chance now that more quality information will rise to the surface, documented, well-researched information, and that, as was the case a decade or so ago, the conspiratorial aspects and voices within ufology will move more back to the edges and not be accepted in the mainstream to the degree that they are. And the quicker that happens and the more it happens, the better for all of us, I think. So all we need to do is just keep doing what we're doing as well as we can do it, and to do it on as much of a grassroots level as possible. You know, every field of endeavor has its superstars, and you know, we can all rattle off names of the best known and the best promoted people in the work, many of whom have earned it. But there is nothing like local contact. I have to leave here early to do a Zoom talk, not a Doom talk, for a regional group in Chicago. When things go back to normal, I will be doing talks at libraries again here in New York State, or by Skype or Zoom, for whoever wants me. There's no substitute for this. And we inspire people to get out and start to do what we did years ago when we became involved and made that transition from an interested student to somebody that really wants to take part in the dialogue and make their mark. So we're in a really good place right now. Mm-hmm. But it's wonderfully ironic that we're having this discussion today, because the wind of history is in all our faces. And mm-hmm. again, whether you were pro or con this current administration, most of us woke up in the morning preoccupied with it for the past 4 years. And frankly, as somebody who is very partisan in this, and the only one of us who is a native New Yorker and who watched our current president's antics for 40 years and went into this with no respect for him as a person or as a leader, with respect to people that feel otherwise, I am so relieved, because the president of the United States' attitude informs so much, and not just in this country. I've already received notes from people in half a dozen countries congratulating me. Personally, I didn't have much to do with the transition of power, but just a little bit. So I just want to say, I'm really proud to be doing what I'm doing, to be doing it as long as I have. And I congratulate all of you, those of you who I know and met are friends, and those of you who are faces here who I don't know, but who I look forward to getting to know better and consider more active colleagues as we move forward together and separately in our work.
Beautiful. Thank you, Peter, so much. Did anybody have anything they wanted to ask Peter or comment on or spin off?
I want to comment that the
following. Danny, Bob, Melinda.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Bob, I can hear you.
Yep.
I think my connection is cutting out badly.
One of the most important components of the election is not done yet. There's a runoff in Georgia that will determine who is in the Senate majority.
That is
more important, in my opinion, than Biden getting elected president. And the reason is, it'll dramatically impact membership and chairmanships of committees.
Correct.
So the chairmanship of the Intelligence Committee will be my old pal, Mark Warner, who helped me do a lot of stuff at Virginia Tech. He is a great senator. He is not a liberal. He is very conservative. He was a conservative Democratic governor of Virginia, and he is deeply trusted by the people in the intelligence community. We're going to have to put up with at least a year of, oh my God, revenge taking. Think about all those Republicans who were quiet Republicans, but they were Republicans that were at the top of the FBI that Trump has trashed for 4 years. The vengeance will seem like hell on earth.
Yep.
It is going to be so bad. I just hope we get over it quickly.
I don't know. Yeah. I think
I don't think we will get over it quickly, but I hope we will. Okay. So, but Marco Rubio and Mark Warner are of like mind on, why are we hiding this stuff? Let's get it out in the open. Yep. Or it wouldn't have passed unanimously in the Intelligence Committee and become part of the DOD funding bill. And it did become part of it. And I don't know whether or not this report, which is due in the early part of the Biden administration, will even come out, but let's hope it will. And if it does, since it's mandated, we will get something. But the words that keep coming out of the Pentagon is they're going to classify so much stuff that what we actually get is minuscule. That's kind of the implication. So my opinion is, given the natural people in TTSA like Christopher Mellon and Lou Elizondo, that together and independent from TTSA, because it appears to me they're almost operating independently of TTSA now. They're just like an amazing force all over the place. And Mellon is friends with Mark Warner. And he was in the Department of Defense during the Obama administration for some time. So he is going to be able to work with the new incoming Democratic administration and the Democratic members of the Intelligence Committee. And let's just hope that goes that way and we get stuff out of them. So Peter, I just wanted to comment one more thing before I shut up. And that is, I was a member of the intelligence community from 1982 until 2011. And then I left in 2011 and helped the intelligence community by founding the Hume Center for National Security and Technology at Virginia Tech, which is now the highest funded research center at Virginia Tech. We took it from zero to over $20 million during my tenure. And I left in May. I retired. I retired from that job and I left my security clearance behind. I'm debriefed because I've had experiences and they've been profound. And I'm doing SkyHub and all sorts of other stuff. And I'm all the way out here in the open and I don't care who knows. So I want to agree with you on that. It's changed. That's a major change.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah. It has been. I think it's definitely a change for the better. And you're not only seeing this at a government level, I think you're seeing this down to children, really, or young adults. You know, they're looking at this topic not just as some taboo type of, oh, it was on Unsolved Mysteries. They really are starting to dive in and explore this subject. And especially for young experiencers out there, I think of myself, you know, diving in the early or the late 90s and just trying to find a foothold of information. And it was overwhelming. I think things are better these days. We have credible faces behind the information that gets out there and is, you know, sorted through. So, Melinda, I know based on our conversation we had last night, you might want to throw your two cents in here.
Yes,
so
yes.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. You knew I was chomping at the bit. A lot of this is stuff that her and I talked about. Can you guys hear me okay? Is my mic okay, since I didn't get to test it out first? Okay, well, before I get into that, I do want to say that I want to make the best of my ability here an impassioned plea to ufology. And I mean, many of you know, you know, kind of where I stood on this. Peter already, you know, alluded to it. I mean, as far as the election, you know, and we have a divided community in many ways. I don't know what percentages in our community. I mean, certainly there are those that voted for Trump and those that didn't. But we also have some very vocal pro-Trump people, or that were, you know, I don't know if they'll continue to be, but they certainly were. And I think it's really, really important that this community come together.
Yeah.
And yeah, that we, whichever side you're on, look, we're all in this for the truth about UFOs, UAP, an extraterrestrial presence. When it comes to the major issues on that subject, we're on the same page. Many of us, I know Jay there, myself, Nicole, Grant, I think all of us, now that I look around the panel, all of us understand the consciousness aspect of this subject and how important it is. I know we all do. I can look around the panel and go, we all get it. And we are all knowledgeable about that. And so I just want to say to the community that, look, when it comes to the major, if you listed out all what is ufology and all its items and all the things we're concerned about, 80, if not 90% of it, we're all on the same page. And I feel very secure in saying that. And so even whatever your political view, we need to, you know, definitely bury that hatchet and go like, okay, we're one voice going forward. I think all the indicators show that we are heading towards disclosure fast. Does that mean it's going to happen this year? Probably not. Come on. Could it happen the next 4 years? Maybe. And it depends on what you call disclosure. You know, I think we could have a discussion, maybe we should later, about what actually defines disclosure. What is that? You know, and there could be a partial disclosure, because to me, any movement forward, even if they're moving the goalpost, it's still movement forward. And so going back to first, that was what I wanted to say to the whole UFO community. Let's approach this moving together. We all care about that subject. put politics aside. We care about this subject. We need to have a focused voice going forward in disclosure. If we are attacking each other, that just discredits us further, and we will be marginalized out there by the greater community even more so. And I think it's really important for all of ufology to go, you know what, we do need to work together. We need to speak as much as we can as one voice so that we have a place at the table. As disclosure goes forward, we don't want this to get out of ufology's hands in some way. We want at least a voice and a place at that table. So let's be, you know, together at the table as a family of ufology, regardless of your views. Yeah, sure, I unfriended a few people on Facebook that were just way too annoying, but very few. And most of the friends I've had for years, I kept as my friends. They knew where I stood. I knew where they stood. We were, so there are people I haven't talked to in 6 months because of politics. But I can say I'm still their friend, you know, and nothing there changed. So I think in ufology, we need to go, hey, I mean, there are a lot of very vocal people in this community who may now be very, very upset at the way things went, aside from, you know, Peter and I and Bob and, you know, pretty much everyone on this panel is probably grateful the way it went. But, and I don't know, Danny, you're awfully quiet about this for all I know. I don't know where you stood on the political, you know, spectrum, but it doesn't matter because we're ufology. We're the UFO community. We care about the truth. We care about the reality of an extraterrestrial presence, however you define that. We still care about it unanimously. We care about disclosure going forward. We care about the consciousness part, the sciences part, all, you know, what can I say? So in the history of it. So again, I say, let's have peace in the UFO community. Let's go forward. Let's focus on this. Keep politics out of it. Keep focused because we need to come to that table as one strong voice. So we have a place at that table as disclosure goes forward. There we go. I'm repeating myself now, but I feel very strongly about that. Now, in more direct answer to Nicole's question, sorry, you guys, I'm taking a bunch of time here, but Nicole and I had a discussion. I am talking to multiple individuals. I do know I've had it confirmed by two different sources that Kamala Harris was present in, and she is now, oh my God, hey, that, Nicole, you and I need to talk about that right now. As a woman, we have a female vice president. You guys, this is history, you know? Absolutely. And right. I think all women everywhere need to celebrate
more
that.
More importantly.
That the first time in all American history. Too. And all men too. Thank you, Peter. Absolutely. And she's a multiracial. That matters less to me because we've already had a black president. But she is multiracial and that is significant as well. But a female in the, you know, in the White House vice president is come on, it's
right. Well, to kind of jump to what we were discussing, Melinda, is the fact that, you know, it's kind of been confirmed through other sources that yeah. she has been briefed.
Yeah, that's what I started to say. I got sidetracked in my celebration moment there, but yeah, in my excitement. But yes, yeah, so that's the point I was making. She was in the SSCI meetings, the briefings. She was on the committee and was in multiple briefings. And I have had that confirmed now from multiple sources who were in a position to absolutely know that that's the case. Mm-hmm. I have it also from a very, very reliable source that Biden is favorable to the subject. I do not know to the degree he was briefed, but I suspect he was, especially with all that going on. I have a call in to some of my sources. I did as of yesterday after evening, you know, after talking to Cole and stuff, and it's multiple sources and a few others. I didn't even mention her, but I have some calls in. I've not heard from anybody. So unfortunately I have not. And I'll tell you, one of the people I've also had a call in to was Jim Semivan, that I wanted to give an update on what To the Stars has to say about this and everything. And unfortunately I have not been able to talk to him, so I don't have that. But I can tell you this from multiple sources, Kamala Harris was actually in those briefings. So there you go on that. And and again, a very, very reliable source who, I can say this, who knows Biden, has not talked to him specifically about it, but knows him and knew kind of where he stood years previously. And he was very, very favorable to the truth about the subject. So right. So based
and
upon
just
that.
For our, oh, go ahead, Melinda. Sorry.
So based upon that, I think it was stated out in the community. I think Chris Mellon had stated something. You guys stop me if I'm wrong, but I'm fairly certain that I saw something that To the Stars did heavily favor Biden, probably for all the reasons I just stated. So that To the Stars had kind of come out in favor of Biden. I think for them that this will be seen as good for what they want to do. If any of you know more about that, you can add your comments. But I think we're moving forward. I think this is good for disclosure. It's good for ufology, and it's certainly good for the nation that we can have some healing and go forward. Mm-hmm. You know, but definitely I wanted to make that statement about the UFO community. And again, everything I see as far as disclosure going forward is on track with that report. You know, as Bob said, 180 days, it takes, does anybody know exactly? And again, that was the thing I was going to ask Jim, is that still on track? Because I think that's late April, if anyone knows, but that's when it goes to the Senate and Congress, if it does, if nothing holds that up, and then they'll, you know, review it and make a decision, I'm sure, on what parts go public. I guess we're all just hoping, you know.
Right. And
that happens, that you know, report gets made public, and yes, it'll have a classified annex. And my understanding is this report, again, everyone else can chime in, but my understanding is, having read the parts that I know that came out in the report that was released already, that it's, you know, incursions into military airspace and military fields of operation and military facilities. But that when you are gathering, and the report is supposed to gather what all the different intelligence agencies and branches of the military know about that. Well, come on, guys, we know in this field, that's an extensively huge amount of data. Mm-hmm. Probably the date of this coming out is going to be pushed way back, because I think they're all in for a shock.
Right.
I think ONI, who's heading up the UAP task force, right? ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence. I think they know how much is there, you know. They may not know everything that's there, but they know it's a lot, you know. And so the date could very well get pushed back. But, you know, hopefully this year a public report will come out. And you guys, you come on. If a public report comes out from the Senate and Congress and the Pentagon, that is a game changer, regardless of what's in it. If there's any factual cases, data, of course there will be, they'll be extensive. It's a game changer, you know, even if parts are classified, and they're already saying anything dealing, Jim Semivan already told me previously, anything with foreign stuff, you know, foreign bases, foreign cases, you know, of course, because there's a national security thing that those aren't going to be in there. But you guys, the possibility of what could still be in there, and that mm-hmm. coming out officially from the mm-hmm. government, you guys, come on. That is disclosure.
I want to elaborate on one thing.
You guys far, go, and I'm done. I'm done.
I want to make sure people understand that the foreign stuff is not just because we don't want anybody to know it. The foreign stuff, if told, could reveal how they captured the data. And that means national intelligence assets,
yes,
technological assets, human sources that would get killed if they were found out.
Of course, no.
So they're just never going to release that.
Yeah, Bob, yes, of course. And right. and I know that. I knew that. I was just simplifying.
I think what's important as well, if I could just quickly jump in, potentially with the new administration going forward, because we've now had the UAPTF formed, we might have a whole new briefing apparatus separate to just TTSA and Christopher Mellon. And, you know, there's actually an official part of the Pentagon DOD that is dealing with this. And I don't think that was fully constructed during the Trump administration in a way that would have been, you know, given them a possibility to enact these briefings. So I would like to think, just speculatively, that the UAPTF as well as TTSA will be playing a role in engaging the new administration, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Jay, they already have, and that Kamala Harris was in those briefings,
right,
which did involve TTSA. So there's already active engagement, and no wonder for that reason and that Two of the Stars came out in favor of Biden winning this for that reason. So I think that's
I wanted to slide in real quick in case for anybody in the audience. The briefings we're talking about Kamala being a part of are the same briefings that allegedly Dr. Eric Davis were a part of, correct?
That's correct.
That we're all in agreement there. So, and these kind of loop into why we formed this panel when we were discussing the Wilson documents and the leak of this information and how important it is. So I would just like a few of you to comment on, do we think with the Senate committee, do we think we're going to see some exposure of the Wilson documents on a national level? Do we think this is, you know,
no,
just a snippet of what's to come.
Absolutely not. This is something that's going to be a civilian effort. If we're going to push it forward, it's going to be a civilian effort. I don't think there's going to be any engagement from any official body in regards to the Wilson documents. That is completely on our shoulders to push that forward.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Jay, completely.
Anything that can...
They might take a look at it behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. But anything that can publicly cause embarrassment to the greater body politic, that's where everybody always sticks together. There may be more informed than intense studies behind the scenes, as just pointed out, which then may lead a few years down the road. But everything happens in slow motion, even though things in front of us are moving very quickly.
I want to see the classified transcripts of Eric Davis's in interview with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence when they ask him what were the numbers of the deep black projects he talked about in that document. And you're never going to see that because it's classified.
End of story. It's true.
All right.
Yeah.
Perfect. And Tom, real quick, I had a question maybe I wanted to pose to you. And we've discussed about the UFO community coming together and moving the needle forward in the social media aspects of all of this and also on the national level. And I think a lot of us often forget, because we talk about TTSA all the time, but we often forget that Christopher Mellon is also a member of MUFON these days and has lent his support to MUFON. Can you talk about or maybe touch on how, you know, that came about and if you've had any contact with him in regards to what the MUFON organization is doing in lieu of this? I mean, you can say what you want. I don't want to trap you into anything or speaking for the entire organization, but I was kind of dumbfounded that Mellon's a part of this board, but you know, it sounds like to me he reached out and wanted to become a member and push the envelope.
Well, he's
forward.
Not a member of the board.
Right.
He's not a member of the MUFON board. He's a MUFON member. But going back in history, when TTSA came out, Jan Harzan reached out to them. And Jan Harzan is from, the Orange County area. So he was close enough to San Diego or whatever the town they're in down there. He was close enough that he could drive down there and meet with them. And he he was curious about TTSA, just like we all were at the time that they came out. And I think a lot of people in the UFO community were thinking, what's going on? You know, what's all this about? So he reached out to them. And I don't know for sure if Chris Millen was already a member or if Jan Harzan maybe encouraged him to, you know, subscribe at least to the journal.
Christopher Mellon,
in the interest of Holder.
Christopher Mellon has joined the scientific advisory board with Kevin Day and a bunch of others that was announced like 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that is not active. Okay. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, Lou Elizondo did come and give the MUFON board a briefing at a MUFON board meeting, but I want you all to know, and I want the whole UFO community to know, that he didn't tell us anything that you all haven't heard, you know, that he hasn't talked about publicly. And he was particularly specific about the three or four capabilities that UFOs have in terms of being able to operate in space, in the atmosphere, and underwater. So that was especially important to him, along with the other things that UFOs do, acceleration and no clear mode of propulsion, et cetera, et cetera. Chris Mellon, well, TTSA is working on they have two things that are going to affect the UFO community directly. One is their vault program, which is they're trying to develop a database that works out of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And then they're working on the Scout app. And what they'd like to do is have anyone in the public be able to take their phone and, you know, make a report then and there. Or if they see it, they see something, they can, you know, they can take a video of it and put it into this database. And I think that TTSA's hope is to be able to develop infer patterns from, you know, all the data in this artificial intelligence program. So I think that's something they're trying to do. Now, I've been listening to the TTSA Talks podcasts. And if you all haven't listened to them, I really encourage you to do so because there's a lot of information in there. And the impression that I get is Mellon and Elizondo's true goal is to help the military and to try to get the government more involved in tracking the UFO problem. I think they're much more, now this is just my personal opinion, but I think they're much more interested in that than they are on the civilian side. I do think that Tom DeLong is interested in the civilian side, maybe more than Elizondo and Mellon are. But we'll just have to see how this plays out. I went on the SEC website and I looked at TTSA's latest filing, and I'm from a financial background, but when I look at their numbers, it's like, I don't know what's going on. I'm not confident at all when I look at their financials. Now, I could be wrong, but their latest filing, they're running a deficit in their P&L, their profit and loss, and they have a deficit in their capital account. So you know, I'm not sure what's going on there, and I try to take a wait and see attitude about TTSA. I do think personally, and this is just my personal opinion, I think that their intentions are good. And I don't subscribe to the view that because they're from the government that they can't be trusted. I don't take that viewpoint at all. Does that answer your question, Nicole?
I think we might have lost Nicole for a second there.
Can I ask a question now that Nicole's gone? Let me ask a question of Bob and Danny, who hasn't said anything yet. In terms of this new report that's supposed to be coming out, my question is, whoever is running it, do they actually know? Because if you get the other than what Eric Davis may have said in the briefing, If you take a look, one of the things that was significant to me was that Trump didn't drop this thing, that he was given a briefing by Navy, as I understand. They showed him the videos. They said these are unidentified. And he said, well, I don't really believe this stuff. And so if that may be the extent of what the Navy knows, that we have an unidentified phenomena, we are tracking it. And that's basically all they know. So my question is, what do you expect from this report? And is it on time? Because we keep hearing about this April thing. Did it actually go through? Is this thing going to come out? And what are the chances that they're actually going to release something or just play the same game that they've played for 40 years and give the finger? Because if they gave the finger to Admiral Wilson, who says that they're going to tell the intelligence community anything? There is somebody who has the material, because you have people who have the gun camera footage. You know, you hear these stories about them being at Rendlesham Forest investigating the Falcon Lake case in Canada where these secret investigations took place. So somebody has it, but does the Navy intelligence that is producing this report, do they actually have the material, or is it above their head as well?
Can I just jump in for one moment at this most fascinating time in our discussion to say that I have to jump? Wishing you all the best. I just have to get on to this other talk in Chicago. A very exciting day, a very exciting time. We should continue these dialogues on a more and more regular basis and do our best to expand our audience outside of the choir, so to say, which I think is one of the biggest and most exciting challenges facing all of us right now. So,
absolutely.
Signing off for the moment. Have a great day, right. Great weekend, everyone.
Bye, Peter.
Thank you.
Peter, let me jump in before Danny does and just say that in September, Defense News published an article that said the NDAA was delayed until after the election when Trump threatened to veto it. And nothing's changed. Go ahead, Danny.
Thank you. Over and out for now, gang.
Bye, Peter. Yeah, I don't think that it's passed, as Bob was just saying. When it does, I think it's going to be blasted out all over social media. Everyone's going to be reporting it. So it hasn't started yet. The 180 days until the report, it hasn't started. So we're just kind of waiting for that to happen. And I think there is still this struggle as far as UAPTF, who I think are, you know, they're ATIP, and they are more above ground. Now, they are secretive at times, but they're more above ground than, you know, these SAPs or whatever you want to call them. There's other acronyms for them, for those other programs. And I do think there's still a struggle going on between these extra, extra secretive programs and the UAPTF, who's dealing directly with politicians and bureaucrats, and they're like above water, whereas everyone else is super secretive. So I think there's a struggle going on there. It's probably going to continue. I mean, people are like Eric Davis bring up the fact that maybe some of the SAPs don't even know what each other are doing. So UAPTF, I think, is still in the battle with getting this information out and to the politicians and senators and bureaucrats and everyone else. And that probably isn't going to stop for a long time. I mean, I just wrote a blog a couple weeks ago about, you know, holding the secret keepers accountable. And I was basically talking about the SAPs. I don't think Elizondo is necessarily a secret keeper. If you are, you don't go on national TV news and say that the government has UFO debris. That's not what a secret keeper does. Now, of course, he follows NDAs and things like that, and he's not saying everything he knows because he doesn't want to go to prison or hurt the United States. But he's not in a super, you know, deep SAP holding everything hostage, basically. So that's going to continue, and I think that's what UAPTF's main goal is, or one of their goals, is to get this stuff out of these deep, deep projects and into at least the hands of the government. More so than even if the public don't get it, at least the politicians will get a chance to look at it. And as far as Trump, you know, I think it's extremely telling that Mellon, you know, basically said he wanted Biden in. You know, Mellon knows what he's doing. He has his whole life in the government. And if he thought Trump was going to be a better situation as far as UAP knowledge getting out, I don't think he would have endorsed Biden the way he did. You know, Tom, I think, is probably more emotional. Lou publicly is pretty apolitical, but Mellon kind of put it all out there. So I think that's extremely telling, and I think it's really great. And I'm choosing to be really hopeful with Biden in now. we don't know what all, I mean, we had a lot of great progress under Trump. And I don't know if any was of that was because of him, or if, you know, a lot of it seemed to start under Obama or even presidents before him. So it's kind of pretty speculative as far as what president did what. But I think we can be very hopeful. There's a new day now with Biden here. Like everyone is talking about, Harris has been in briefings. Biden certainly has seen things as vice president as far as briefings. So we can be pretty hopeful and we can be happy. And I think it's a lot to be to look forward to. And I think it's a great thing. And I think UAPTF is going to do a lot of good. I'm still hoping that the 180 days starts and it gets passed. But when it does, we're all going to know about it. It's going to be a huge deal. I'll put it on my blog. It's going to be on every blog in the UFO community, and we'll be excited about it.
Can I ask a question? Does Trump have to sign off on this?
Let me say one more thing. See, Danny spoke about SAPs, and he made a suggestion. And I want to say more emphatically that Danny did. That's normal operating procedure. SAPs often do not have a clue who is in another SAP, what they're doing, who is funding it, who the customer is. They're just totally walled off from each other. And it is really an impediment to making progress in science and technology. I'm sorry, Grant, go ahead.
No. Yeah, the question I had for Danny and maybe you is, does Trump have to sign off to get the 180 days started?
Yes. I think whoever the president is.
Whoever the president is.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any chance he's going to do that at this point?
No.
Okay.
Or he'll block. I mean, who knows? I don't want to speculate, but I mean, I don't know what he's going to do now if he's voted out and he wants to lash out at people. I don't know. And I don't even want to, maybe he won't. Maybe he's going to do a lot of great stuff. You know, I try to stay apolitical in my reporting. I'm not personally, but I try to stay apolitical. So I don't know what's going to happen now. There's a lot of things up in the air now. Who knows what's going to happen until Biden gets in.
But I don't think the legislation has even gone into conference committee yet. And they have to, you know, the House and the Senate have to reconcile their differences. And then overall, it hasn't passed. And then the president has to sign it.
Yeah, and that's concerning, you know, right? Because if I'm not mistaken, I haven't been following everything as closely as I should, but more Republicans are in the government now, although Biden won. Right? So, you know, we might be locked up in traffic now and everything may be getting jammed up. So there's a lot of just political stuff behind the scenes that we're going to be having to deal with. But one other thing I wanted to mention is that I'm expecting, or I'm thinking, I also wrote a blog about this months ago, that Mellon and maybe even Elizondo are going to go back to government, maybe even run for office. Mellon might be a bureaucrat and maybe even take a role. Who knows? He may take a role with UAPTF as something like that and promoting UAP within the government. So they may end up going back to government. They may be ending up being representatives or senators. And I would look out for that. That may end up happening. That may be their end goal. And how cool would that be to have Mellon or Lou back in government doing work we all want them to do. So I think that's kind of being underreported. That's something to look out for in the future.
I would speculate maybe, because we do talk about this often, you know, is this just a fluff piece that's going to go away? Is this our little snidbit of disclosure? And then is it all going to get brushed under the rug like Blue Book, like the Condon report? And we see inklings of that. And one thing I think of, I was talking about Stanton Friedman earlier this morning, you know, when he would hold up his redacted, you know, pages filled with black lines and say, yeah, there's nothing here. Sure, there's nothing to see here, all black, you know. And there's those in the community that think this is a situation like that, where whatever this committee might produce is going to be so blackballed that it's not even going to disclose anything. So my question, I guess, to all of you in the panel that would like to weigh in is, what then do we speculate the next move? Do we think the TTSA, and we've known since the Phenomenon movie, Christopher Mellon was pretty much the line out for this information. Do we think there's more videos that Mellon may have gotten out of the government? Do we think TTSA or another entity has more information that they would whistleblow release to the public to maybe kick the football again?
Can I jump in real quick and just say, yes, I mean, I might not address what you just asked specifically, and I don't just want to go on about TTSA, but I think, I mean, at least from my opinion, I think these guys are thoroughly pissed off, you know, especially Christopher Mellon. I have a suspicion that he's actually learned a lot more as he's gone on through what he's been doing recently. And I think that these people are extremely disgruntled that they have been in key positions of oversight and authority in these types of places and have maybe potentially, and at least it's looking like it to them, been left outside of where they should have been informed on the on these issues. So I don't think, because there's obviously we have the civilian effort. I don't expect anyone here and anyone else within the community to just completely give up. We'll always be pushing this forward. But I do have faith that this is not ending in terms of the political engagement, especially through people like TTSA. And I don't know who's in the UAPTF and what their overall goal is in terms of engaging with the political system. But I really do think that it's got to a point now where there's people that just really want to know the answers, and they're in the right positions, people like Christopher Mellon, to start pushing buttons within the bureaucracy. So, I mean, just from my perspective, I'm quite optimistic.
I had heard early on when it first started, that we had the 200 videos. And if you listen to James Fox's version of the Mellon story, he got the videos in the parking lot of the Pentagon, which would indicate to me that this was, again, this was not an approved sort of leak. It was a leak that came from people sympathetic inside the government to get this thing out. And I think that would be the biggest thing that we can hope for, is that guys like Mellon and Elizondo have got the connections where they're going to drop some more stuff. And if Melinda Leslie would do her job and talk to Jim Semivan and get us clarification.
Doing that right now, I think, by the looks of it.
I think that's where it comes down. These guys are the only sort of hope that I think. I'm very pessimistic about the government committees it going through and anybody giving them anything, especially if Trump didn't get it, get the proper briefing. The intelligence committee, I think, is going to be cut out by whoever's holding the secret. And it's I think it's up to the whistleblowers that come out through Mellon, through Elizondo, to put more pressure on people to make releases.
I roll them rejoins government, they're going to sign NDAs and clam up.
And these guys can't really be releasing these videos unless they want to go to jail. It's not even up to Elizondo and Mellon. You know, they had those three. If they had more videos, they would have released them at this point. They've seen other videos. I don't know if they have them in their possession or not, but it's not legal to release them because they haven't been okayed to do so.
I want you to look at Danny and others have seen and have published, et cetera. So has Keith down in Australia, et cetera. Publish the tortured path they took to get those videos out of the government. And it was like that close to the edge. They mislabeled them. They did all sorts of stuff. And they said they mislabeled them and got them out. And so look, the mislabelings were passed on and it proved, and they got them out. That door slammed shut as soon as the crap hit the fan.
Yeah, I mean, there are factions in the Pentagon that do not want this stuff out.
How do you? Sorry, Tom.
You might also check Keith Basterfield's website, because he has an article there. And he has a picture. I think it was 4 DVDs, maybe 6, that Christopher Mellon got, and it's got the name of the guy who handed it to him.
R. Essex. Now, Grant knows more about him. Grant,
actually a woman. It's actually a woman that handed it off from Public Affairs. Yeah. Her name escapes me. Exxon? What's the
Essex?
Essex. It's it's a woman. I had a source that told me it was a woman, and her name is escaping me. D. It starts with D, but it's a woman.
Do we know why Susan Goff replaced her?
Okay.
Yeah, and for the record, to this day, Lou says that everything was done on the up and up as far as the videos being released. But then we have Mellon saying that it was subverted some things. So it depends who you ask, and you know, it's slightly different stories, but we know that they came out and it was basically a miracle that they did. And I don't know that that's going to happen again, but there are tons.
They have a paper trail. They have a paper trail. They manipulated the system. They legally got them out. And now that method will never work again.
Can I ask why people feel and maybe this has actually been explained.
So that's not exactly disclosure.
Okay, that's not exactly disclosure.
I think we might have some latency issues.
It's sleight of hand.
I'm loving your background, by the way, Tom. I'm loving the change of background. That's great. I was just gonna say, and maybe this has been something that people have actually managed to find out properly, because you're right in regards to they're probably gonna clam up in and not be able to use that type of system again to get things out. But how did the UAPTF exactly get formed? Was it due to compounding pressure that made people feel they had to actually create this response team, or was it actually internally people that were for pushing this further down the line? I don't know how far TTSA was involved in creating the connecting network that formed the UAPTF, but I'm just curious whether you guys think it was the government acting on pressure or people within the government acting on a sense of duty.
I don't think people understand how badly all sorts of people inside the United States Navy decided bullshit, they went close to rogue. And they are, that's one of the reasons the UAPTF is kind of being run out of O&I.
Right.
The Navy is pissed off at things running around at ridiculous speeds under the water. And by no known physics can anything move through an incompressible fluid like they observe. And they're tired of it.
UAPTF is also ATIP, so in a way, it's always been there. Now they have more funding, and now they're above ground more so than ever. But it's always been there. They were there. So some of the same people that were in ATIP are now in UAPTF. So it was always there. It's not new. But then it kind of became a new conglomerate also and got new funding. So
I guess I'm wondering why the official response to a transference into the UAPTF, you know what I mean? Like, why did they decide, you know what, we're actually going to announce that we've got this UAP task force, we're going to put it on the, you know, the DoD's official website. Why do you guys think that they did that?
I think it's because TTSA, their work, it succeeded. Yeah. And also the guys that are in government that aren't in TTSA working along with them or working even on their own, everything worked. It succeeded, and what they did succeeded, and that's why we can be really happy about what's going on.
Can I make a point here? I think we have to go back and listen to Tom DeLonge's interview. It was done in 2016. It was either with Jimmy Church, but I think it was with George Knapp, where he talks about how this thing started, where he goes to the barbecue outside of Lockheed, and then he gets invited to the skiff, the Lockheed skiff, and he makes his pitch as to, you guys aren't getting the message across. And then the one guy says, you know, this might actually work. And they send him to the Pentagon. They send him outside the Pentagon to these two intelligence guys. Those two intelligence guys send him to NASA. NASA sends him to Ames. And then he goes around and then he gets met up with the guy from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and the guy from Space Command. And you see that they arrange these people. So I still maintain there is a group of people who are sympathetic, who are sort of pushing the thing, that Tom DeLonge didn't do this on his own. Everybody seems to think that he did it. He was let in, and just like Bill Moore in the 1980s, and he was given a bunch of people to talk to. So we have to remember that in the background, there are some people sympathetic that have made some moves inside the government to help to the stars. They never would have got where they were if he hadn't been given all these different people to describe. And if you look at the Podesta, and I've watched Podesta today, there's no indication of that he's involved or that he's talking about it again. But if you look at the Podesta leaked emails from WikiLeaks, you'll see the McCaslin, the guy at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, actually writes a memo on what to do when disclosure comes, about how to handle it, how to delegate it. He makes this long memo that is there, which indicates that there is some people behind the scenes that you may say they've disappeared. I don't think they've disappeared. I think they just took them off the record once they were exposed. I think Tom DeLonge has a lot of people, and I think Melinda can refer to this as well. Melinda and I have always talked about Jim Semivan talking about this cosmic club, the inner circle, whatever you want to call them, of 50 people, that there's a lot of people working in behind the scenes that are helping TTSA. And I think they're the best chance we've got of some more pressure being exerted, because that's where the initial pressure came from. It came from Tom DeLonge and these leaks that came through his operation.
I think as well, real quick, to segue from politics to more academics and and what's going on in the scientific community. I think I'm really excited about what Gary Nolan and Jacques Vallée are up to with their metamaterial, you know, studies, because, you know, the political engagement plus the academic engagement are the two strongest points. And someone brought up here that they don't feel that TTSA is that engaged with the public and they're more concerned with politics. And I'd agree. And as much as I'm part of the UFO community and one of the people in the masses of, who's trying to get this out there, I can sympathize with the fact that you don't necessarily need to be convincing every single civilian on the street. You need to be convincing institutions, political bodies, people that can actually start moving, you know, cogs and gears. And so I'm excited about the political side of this with TTSA and the UAPTF, but I'm also really excited about how the academic communities are going to respond to things like these metamaterial studies that so far, from what we've got from little snippets like from the phenomenon, do seem to be really suggestive of something outside of our envelope, you know?
I want to comment on that. So that was, to me, outside of Mellon admitting that he was the source that got it out. That was the most shocking thing to me. And just let me try, I just left, you know, 10 years in academics and academia. And it will not impress most academic tenure track scientists that a private group inside of Silicon Valley funded that research. It'll be really hard to get it in peer-reviewed journals. Okay, so the breakthrough that we need, the breakthrough, is for there to be enough public pressure, public interest, that it gets to Congress and they enable the National Science Foundation, the Office of Naval Research, the Air Force Office of Scientific Research, on and on, to fund academics to study this problem. If the normal funding sources for academics come along and fund work, and the people who get that money can publish that work in peer-reviewed journals and improve their career, then we've won. Until then, we have not.
Can I ask you, isn't most funding coming from the government? I mean, there's not like a lot of private money going to be thrown at an academic institution.
Correct. Most of the government funding, but most of the funding for research is done by the government. There's an increasing fraction that's done by private industry, but those are research contracts. They are not research grants. A grant is a gift to an individual and his research team, his or her research team, that allows them to try to figure stuff out. A research contract from a company or the government is a line item with deliverables and an approved statement of work that you cannot deviate from. We want grants from granting agencies to come to academics that allow them the freedom to discuss with people and do the work out in the open.
Well, I'd like to say something to that, because if the government wanted studies done, that would have happened a long time ago. What that tells me is they have no interest in having any studies done.
Or they're doing them secretly.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be like through these special access programs or through private enterprise, you know, like the big aerospace companies.
I mean, I had all these unclassified research programs, tens of millions of dollars of them while I was at Virginia Tech. And they did one thing. I mean, I had to shut up. All I had to do was make them ITAR. The minute they were ITAR, it was restricted who I could talk to, and they might as well have been classified. There are all sorts of mechanisms to shut down publication of interesting work.
So are you saying, Bob, that the prerequisite for academic study and funding is definitely an engagement of the public to the political sector first then?
So yes, for them to give money,
yeah,
earmarked to the National Science Foundation, et cetera, for the study of what the hell are these UAPs? What the hell are these USOs? Find out for us. Here's a pot of money. And then NSF will administer it and try to do the best job it can at finding research academics who have a research team of students, et cetera, that can do the work.
It's it's a difficult one, I feel, because you've got the, you know, you've got the civilians who would need some form of good, solid scientific evidence and study, which needs to come from the academic communities if it's not going to come from government, if they're not going to declassify a lot of information. And it's
that's
like,
that's not quite right. That's not quite right. The data, which let's call it observational science, only needs to be objective, demonstrably objective, demonstrably secured, demonstrably unmolested, with all sorts of metadata, all sorts of security. That data can be used for academic purposes so long as you can track every bit from the source to where it's stored. That's why SkyHub is doing what it's doing with the data and storing it into Google Cloud. We are trying to let the hundreds of folks that are signed up for SCU have data on which they can do research. And that's what's needed. We need data that people can trust and where Bob's interpretation doesn't make a damn. What the interpretation is what scientists figure out in their head they want to try. I won't tell them what to do. The data SkyHub gives them, whether it's my passive radar or Steve McDaniels, et cetera's fancy videos that are marked and identified as something interesting, all of that goes to a cloud, and we have nothing else to do with it other than, you know, a few of us pay for all this Google Cloud storage. But we want to show that the data is unmolested throughout the entire path so that scientists will trust the data. They have to trust the data in order to do academic research on it. Otherwise, they're uninterested. So lots of DOD data will never be trusted by academic scientists. And so they'll only do research contracts, and then that'll be secret.
I always go back to something Gary Nolan said, and I always butcher his analogy. In fact, I've just been inspired to write a blog on it as we've been sitting here. I need to go find that quote and publish it. But he was talking about, you know, as far as the journals and convincing science or convincing academia, they release one brick of information at a time. They're not showing you the whole building of, you know, UFOs are real or non-human intelligence is real. They're going to release one brick of information at a time and build up that house, build up that building. And then each brick is accepted by academia and the scientific community at a time. And then eventually they have all these bricks and then they say, here's the building.
That
so
report,
I don't know if that makes sense. But...
Can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. The 180D report will have more than a few bricks in it. Okay, you guys, I apologize for being so rude right then. I hope most of you caught on to what was going on then. I was just on the phone with Jim Semivan. And so I took his call and interrupted the panel. And I do apologize. And that was very rude. And to any viewers out there, but given that that was him returning my call with a million questions and things for this panel, that I hope everybody is understanding, given the source. What?
We forgive you, Melinda. Spill the beans.
Okay. there's so many things, and I was scribbling real fast, and some of it you guys might just be immediate memory from you guys engaging in conversation with me and asking me questions. But to start with, the 180-day report deal, the funding has not come through yet. Yes, you know, the task force exists. It is starting to do work and starting to gather stuff, but they're doing it with limited funding that they were able to, you know, get from the DOD. And that's the UAP task force, obviously I'm talking about. And they said the intelligence bill has not been signed off on yet. It's still being reviewed by Congress, and it has not been signed off by the president. But Jim was explaining, because he used to be in the money end of all that. That was his job, and he's very familiar. I see Bob, you know, nodding there. He's extremely familiar with how it works, and he was explaining that in detail, and he said this is not unusual. It doesn't get signed off right away. And I said, but, you know, didn't the fiscal year begin in October? He said, yes, of course. But he said, this is all very normal. And he said, but it's on track to, and they're not hearing of any changes or anything to it. So he said, they suspect it'll get funded. He said, yeah, it'll happen. It'll happen before year end. And it's likely to happen, you know, yeah, within the next 2 months. So he said, yeah, that's, yeah, Bob, I see you raising your hand there.
I just want to say something. UAPTF, in my guesstimation, this is a guess, but it comes from several different things. When they got funded was last fall. So what that says to me is they put in an unfunded request for funds from the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense, not knowing what ONI was doing or whatever, reached out and grabbed a pot of money that some other part of the government didn't spend, and they were going to lose it at the end of the fiscal year. And so they sweep money. It's called an August sweep. They swept the money, got an unfunded request, put through, and that's how they're operating and getting billets. But I got to tell you, they need real money, son.
Yeah, yeah. He was saying...
It's a UFO, unfunded opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. And he threw out some quick numbers and stuff. Like, I there was something I stuck in my head, like where he said they only got 15% of it or something, you know, whatever he was saying like that. So, but he said they did get some, so they're beginning the work and they're ready to hit the ground running. Apparently, the Navy, again, is really very much behind this and doing this. So he said, when that goes through, as long as there's no changes to that, it will be that the report is still supposed to come back to the Senate in 180 days. But the other part he's saying is, he said, they are probably going to figure out really quick that they need more time than that, you know? And he said, therefore, even though it states that, he said it could be where they come back and request more time. But he said, it is in there. It, as far as they know, there's going to be no significant changes. They've not heard of anything. And he said they expect it to go through as planned as soon as the whole intelligence bill gets signed off on. And he said that will happen. He said it could happen real soon or it could happen a month from now, but, you know, relatively soon, definitely before the end of the year. And then, so I said, is it safe then to then assume that next year, if it's not April, then we're talking, you know, okay, it's already a month later, whatever, you know, and the 180 days won't, you know, I said, even get signed right away. But I said, even if they get more time, I said, so we're pushing it back to May, June, July, they get more time, August, September, you know, I said, but we will next year get this report. And he said, yes, he said, it's in there. They expect it to be included. They may come back and need a lot more time, but he said, yeah, next year and probably sooner rather than later, you know, there should be this 180-day report. So he was saying everything was on track, but because it hasn't been signed yet, there's no beginning date for that amount of time. And additionally, it's likely to get changed. He said, I'm throwing out a bunch of things that are going to be out of order, but I'll go over all these just because I scribbled them down on a piece of paper. He said, Two Stars is not taking any credit. He said it was the DOD that did all the work on this. The forming of the task force, everything. He says, that is the DOD. That is the Navy. He said, you know, we don't want to take any credit. He said, a lot of people did a lot of work. And he said, yeah, you know, were we involved? Yeah. But he said, they really did the work. This is their doing. This is the DOD wanting this to happen. And I think that's a very important point for everyone to realize that the DOD wants to do this. The Navy wants to do this.
He's, I find that
emphasizes that. Yeah. Okay. Then.
And Jim's being humble there.
I bet the Air Force doesn't want to do this.
He went on to say they have aerospace and a couple of things. I said, can I say this? He said, yeah, you know, their aerospace division is getting contracts for development of technology. I didn't have a chance to ask him. He had house guests there and stuff. And between my wanting to get back to this panel and him having house guests, him and Deb having house guests. So I was, that's his wife. But he did say they were getting contracts. Now I know earlier in this panel, we talked about, Tom, you brought it up. You looked at their money that To the Stars has, you know, and what they're officially reporting. And he talked about that. I didn't ask him. He brought it up. But he said, we have a lot of projects we're trying to get funding on. And he said, they are in the midst. And he couldn't give me the specifics because he said the people involved would cut his, you know, would get really, I said cut his head off. He didn't use that word. But he said they'd be very upset. And they're doing a couple of Hollywood projects and stuff. They have entertainment projects and stuff going on. And he said, because they pay, you know, so basically there's stuff there and contracts there and projects underway. And he said, we're working on a number of things that way. And he said, as well as we will get some money up front for some of our contracts that are aerospace related. And so he said, you know, we're trying to do these things to bring in some money because there's been no money there. So that just matched with what you guys were discussing. He also said, he talked about, it's funny, I realize, Bob, there you were talking about your technology and what you guys are working on and your plans with that. And unfortunately, I'll have to go back and listen because I just only heard a tiny bit in the background. And it was funny, at the same time you guys were talking about that, he was telling me about their projects along that way. What is it called? The different programs they have. I know they have what, Scout, and what was the other
Vault,
one?
Vault and the Scout. Vault.
Yeah, and he mentioned those and he said they were getting some funding for those programs and they're really emphasizing separating the noise from the actual data and to get a reliable source. And I think that he talked about, I can't remember exactly what he said, but that they were getting some government funding for some of that because the government's interested in their data. I think the Navy and the guys they're working with the UAP task force are interested in the data that they get. So they're getting some funding for that as well. And he said it's to separate out, like I said, he kept going on about separating out the noise from the actual to get really reliable information. And if we can and demonstrate that, you know, that the government is interested. Now, you guys, they're not doing that just for the government. They're doing that. Yes. Yes, Bob.
I want to say, so if anybody wants to just go look at the SkyHub webpage, yeah. 95% of the work, is not video. It's not signals. It's not sensors. It's filtering the crap out.
Yeah.
So you get something interesting. Yeah, that's all of the machine intelligence that SkyHub is doing is about. And on the other hand, my understanding, which may be faulty, is that TTSA is working with Monster, which is this massive machine learning and artificial intelligence company that's done a ton of work for the government.
I think he did mention that on my call.
They're huge.
Yeah.
So, but that's going to be kept secret. And yes. I just want to say that SkyHub is all out in the open. So all that machine learning to separate airplanes and satellites and meteors and other crap from something that looks interesting in the sky will be done in the open.
Yeah, well, he said, Vault in its, you know, findings will be public, but if they are successful at doing it, the government is interested in the data as well. But that gives them some funding for that. But that's not because that info just goes to them. It's public information first. And he said, but they're interested in getting the same data that we are, you know, is kind of the way he emphasized that. So there was nothing. I just want the viewers out there to understand there's absolutely nothing nefarious about it at all. It's just, it's their way to get some funding and some help, you know, and to get actual data that will be both public, but the government gets to, therefore, you know, has access to it just like we do. So it is public data. He said this whole process, he talked about, because we're going on and on about the report and it's supposed to be incursions into military airspace and all those things that I already mentioned on the panel. And he said, you guys, this whole process is going to snowball because one little piece coming out, he didn't say this, I'm using this like it's the ball of yarn and you start to pull it and it unravels really quick. So he said, this will snowball as soon as data, you know, comes out in that report. And Danny, you were saying about one brick, well, this is going to be more than a brick, you know, we might get a brick here, a brick there as it starts to happen. But once that report is public, it's not going to be the end all by any means, everyone, of course, hello, it's just going to be a narrow focus, but it's a starting place of them releasing report. But that report could have tens of thousands of cases in it of data, you know, of incursions into military airspace and landings at military fields of operation and times we've shot them down. And, you know, I mean, it could just be like, you know, and that's kind of the feeling I got from him is, and it is on schedule to happen within next year. Yes, go ahead. Yeah, the Bob, sorry.
Let Jay tell you what Christopher Mellon said about a person that's coming on Jay's interview about some of the data. Chris Mellon made a really interesting thing about travelers from the future.
Well, let me just wrap this up and then Jay, I want to hear all about it. He also said he went into Tom being really busy. Tom DeLonge is in post-production on some projects. He's kind of in a wind down on some different projects. He's got an album and a movie he made and different things. So he's in post-production on a lot of that. And so Tom's been kind of off doing his own thing. Again, the emphasis on they've got military and aerospace division contracts, for their aerospace work. And he says, so we're going to start beginning some of that. And and he also said, I said, anything I can tell ufology beyond what we've talked about? And he said, Phenomenon, the movie, not only being really outstanding and they were proud to be involved in it, but he said, the science and the government community is taking that movie very seriously. So yay, James Fox, good for you. I hope you watch this. Apparently the government and their contacts and people they're talking to, as well as a lot of people in the science community, are responding quite well to that movie. So he wanted that to be out there. And I think that's it. I think I covered the major stuff that we talked about. I'll take any questions from you guys and what's fresh on my mind. I maybe can know how he responded. And Jay, please share what Chris Mellon said.
Yeah, no, cheers for all of that, Linda. Basically, he said, because I'm interviewing Dr. Michael P. Masters. I'm going to forget the name of his book now. It's a multidisciplinary scientific study into the UFO phenomenon or something like that. I think I've messed the title up a little bit there, but I'm interviewing him soon because basically his theory is that the UFO phenomenon is indicative of time traveling humans instead of extraterrestrials. That seems to be his kind of leading hypothesis or theory. So I just tweeted out, you know, that I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Masters, and if anyone has any questions they want to ask, go ahead and ask them. And I got quite a few responses. I got one from Christopher Mellon because, I mean, recently he started following me on Twitter, which really surprised me. And I have sent him a DM, but I haven't had a response yet. So I'm just going to patiently wait and see if he responds.
I tried to friend him on LinkedIn too. I haven't heard anything back.
Yeah, well, it took me by surprise when he suddenly started following me, but I haven't had any direct interaction with him yet. But he commented on the tweet about me doing this interview, and he just said, sure, why are future humans so interested in spying on DoD test ranges? So he wanted me to ask this guy his opinion on why time traveling humans are spying on our test ranges. So yeah, I don't know what you want to take from that.
That was not really about who you're interviewing. That was a statement by Chris Mellon to the entire world.
Yeah.
You might also, Jay, you might also ask him if there are humans time traveling from the future, how is it that some of them are reptilian?
Well,
yeah, I mean, reading between the lines, it kind of doesn't really seem like Chris subscribes to the future humans theory.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
I would say that that's probably true.
Yeah. One thing about what Melinda was saying is, and what Jim was alluding to, TTSA is very smart and they're doing everything they can as far as funding. There's a lot of these CRADA type programs. They have the CRADA and we know about that, but there's a lot of other government programs that they're looking into and maybe even have already started as far as using government resources to help them or with funding or whatever that is. So I've heard some things about that too.
Oh, the other thing I forgot to tell you guys was Jim said hello to all of you. I told him who all was on the panel. He loves all of you. You know, he highly approves of all you guys plus Peter, you know. So when Peter watches this later, you know. And but he says hello to everyone and hello to the viewers. And, you know, I might have been able to patch him in somehow or something if there wasn't a time constraint because he had house guests and everything. They were having a bit of a party because him and his house guests are, he said, I'll quote him on this, longtime Democrats. So
I want to comment on something Danny said because it's important. Cooperative research and development agreements are really awesome vehicles. They say that an entity in the government and an external entity or two entities in the government can work together cooperatively under terms of an agreement. But typically, they contain zero funding. So what TTSA's CRADA says is that the research laboratories might make available all sorts of equipment and other things, but TTSA's got to figure out how to fund its research that the government might want to take advantage of. Now, it's typical that when you have a CRADA that actually accomplishes something, it fires up a ton of government funding. They're making a smart move. It didn't contain a pile of money.
Yeah. No. He's saying they need money, Melinda, but they're doing lots of things that they can to make that happen.
Melinda?
Yes.
Can we ask Jim Semivan to join our group?
Please get him in on the next one.
Yeah. Well, and I told Nicole this on our conversation yesterday. If I know, like we set a date way in advance and I ask him like 3 weeks in advance, he said what he'll do is he'll also go to the group and see who the best one is to have come on. So we might end up having Chris Mellon or Lou or whatever, but we'll take whoever, right, guys?
I'll write up an official invite and send it to TTSA.
Yeah, because he said if he knows far enough in advance, he'll go to the guys and, you know. Now they're doing their TTSA talks, but he is said, you know, you know, that anyways, he said it basically, it was likely that at least one of them would probably come on with us. So there you go.
Melinda, I give you a gold star.
Thank you, Grant. Well, I can't believe you guys. I was sorry to be so rude. I cannot believe that he called me and I'm like, oh, shoot. I'm like staring. And by the way, you guys, Nicole, I held up the phone to the screen. Please edit that out.
I
that was dumb. That was a very big mistake on my part to do that.
I think most people.
We're fine.
Well, make sure his number is not legible. I don't care if it says his name because I already made it clear it was him on the phone. But make sure when I held up the screen like that's either edited out or blurred or something to make sure that number's not legible. I realize I did that real quick and I'm like, oh shoot, I can't have that going out there.
Nicole, do you know how to do that?
It looked all fuzzy. I'll do my best. I didn't really discern anything when you did hold it up.
Well, I did it out of excitement, not realizing, like, just I was showing you guys that he was calling me, not realizing that if there's any information on there, it can't be there, obviously.
I really want to urge you to find some software to rub it out. I encourage all of you to go to the internet on YouTube and look at TECOGAN, TECOGAN. They can take a completely blurry, crapped up piece of shit image, video, etc., and make it crystal clear, just like science fiction and as other movie, other TV shows that are on the air. It's become reality. If it's blurry, they will make it into a number.
I don't care that it says him and his wife's name on the screen, but anything else on there.
Right. All
it, and hopefully I moved it so
a lot
hopefully
of
I moved
times it. Whoever's speaking, it'd be nice that's if they could do that with the most to, general so way.
Yeah, when you look, if you didn't have us all up at once, then maybe no one saw it, you know.
Right.
But I'm asking you and Jay before you put that up to make sure. Thank you, just to, for my sake, guys, because you know I can't have that going out
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Well, you guys, I also want to say, I think we hit peak woo, as Dave Scott would say. I heard reptilians entered the conversation. Yeah. And on that note, I think we're over an hour and a half. I think this might be a good place to wrap it up. So did anybody have any final thoughts for our post-election disclosure discussion?
Nothing.
Nobody raise their hand.
Anybody have any last questions on my conversation with Jim? Like anything you want to know that maybe I can respond to that I'm just, you know, well, it's fresh on my memory? No? Okay.
You did a good job.
Thank you. Yep. Well, I covered all the highlights for sure.
So. No.
Well, you guys, that was great. I think that's going to be a hit. I'd say let's get it out there right away, put it up right away, with the exception of make sure.
I know, and now I have to
make
edit
sure you
it,
didn't have.
Yeah.
It's a race.
Well, hopefully you didn't have me up like it was just the person speaking at the time that you had up on the
It'll
screen.
Be fine. Yeah. I'm teasing, but
okay.
I wanted to thank all of you and thank Peter, who's already left, Tom, Jay, Bob, Danny, all of you. I think we'll probably try to reconvene in a month or so, maybe right before Christmas. We'll do another one here. And
as soon as we figure out who's in Biden's cabinet and some of the people right below them, that will be a time to start thinking.
Yeah. And Jim, one thing he promised me, we talked about this quite at length, is if he hears anything, because I did ask him, what have we heard anything? Have they heard anything from how Kamala or or Joe Biden, the Biden camp? What is their thoughts on this subject? And he said, I'm going to be real honest with you, we haven't heard anything from them. So now I have another source that's talking to them that I'm going to check with. But as far as Jim goes, he says, we haven't heard anything about their opinion. And he could not confirm for me that Kamala was in those meetings. I did ask him. And he said, well, she was on the committee and the committee was there. And I said, well, do we know for certain that she was present? And he said, I don't know that, you know. So
the thing I'm looking for is John Podesta going to be chief of staff?
Exactly.
That's what I want to hear.
Yeah, that's going to be a big
deal. I was going to mention that's another factor is what influence, if any, will John Podesta have in this.
And if he is, not only should we do this panel again, but have Bassett on with us, obviously.
Invited him today, and I don't know if he had something conflicting. He didn't get back to me and tell me yes or no. So yeah, maybe he'll jump in. I'm sure he was probably busy since this official, unofficial announcement came down just this morning. So, you know, he's tied in. He's probably on the phone the whole time.
Belinda, that's a question I'd like you to ask about whether they're in contact with John Podesta, because I think he has been for 30 years the key force. I think he was actually, if you go back my version of it, it was him and Hillary who actually got this thing going and inspired TTSA. So he's a main guy. I checked his Facebook and his Twitter. There's nothing up yet, but I would be very interested if they're in contact with John, because I'm pretty sure John will reach out.
He set up the big
I'm writing that down right here. I just wrote down, Grant, ask Jim if they're in contact with John Podesta.
Good.
Podesta set up the big
Hi, Bob. Hi, Grant. Hey, hey buddy. Buddy. Thank you for my bee. I love my bee.
Talk to you guys later.
Will, how many subscribers have you got?
I will.
91.
91. We're going to put this up awesome. Today. It's going to move high today. We're going to get lots.
That's right. You're going to get lots today, Will.
Okay.
He lost a tooth, you guys.
All right, I got to run. See you.
All right.
This one's ugly.
Say bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. But I got to tell you something that you're going to be all like that. Look at that.
He's got another wiggly one. Oh, you guys are all amazing.
He's on his cock.
Will, you got to tell him to...